Well, I hope you're feeling no pain at all either on Friday. Good evening, Truth Seeker. Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Thank you for tuning in this evening. George Bush is in Vietnam. Think about that sentence for a second. We'll get to a little bit of that a little bit later on in the program tonight. We have a lot of stuff to cover, believe it or not. On this evening's program, so I hope you can stick around for as much of it as you can handle. I said last night, I made mention of the fact that more people turned out to vote Democratic than the Diebold and other machines were programmed to steal the votes. That's an awkward sentence. The Diebold machines were programmed to steal a certain amount of votes. Enough Democrats turned out to overwhelm the theft. That's better. Rob Call at opednews.com has just put up a lengthy piece about this that we will get to on Monday. But if you want to check it out now, go to opednews.com. And look for the story about the evidence that the 2006 congressional election, the one just passed, was seriously hacked. And had it not been for the overwhelming turnout of Democratic voters, we would be facing a Republican-controlled House and Senate right now because of the fraud involved. I hate to do those stories on Friday because they just depress me. You know, all week I'm depressed. Because of what we have to talk about on this program. And I know that we depress so many of our listeners. You know, it's just awful. People tune in this program, and I know some nights they get ready to tune in, they go, Jesus, why am I tuning in this program? It's just going to depress me. So we'll get to it Monday. Now, regarding that massive turnout, I mentioned the other night something about, how people were stimulated to go out and vote. I mean, normal people. I got an email from Jan in New York City, and Jan writes, Mike, we at MoveOn.org made more than 1 million phone calls to encourage voters. 1 million. Well, that's part of it. MoveOn.org that was formed back, was it 98 or 99, when the Republicans were just frothing at the mouth and chewing on Bill Clinton's pant leg about the Monica thing. And MoveOn.org, that's when they came into existence. They said, look, censure the guy and move on. And, of course, Republicans would have none of that. They had to have their impeachment over a private semi-sexual affair and the lie told to cover it up. Now, the lies told by George Bush, of course, are not that important to the Republicans. Well, we'll see. So MoveOn.org made more than 1 million phone calls. Thank God for that organization. I don't care if you agree with them all the time or not. I really don't. A politically active organization like that in these times is stunning. Thank God they're there. What is going on with PlayStation 3? People are being shot. What? You know, I can't get my mind around this. Kathy and I were out in the country today buying what were we buying? Little trees. What were we buying? What the hell was it? I forget. We had a whole van full of it. What was it?
Those are called shrubs.
Shrubs.
Little trees.
Little trees.
It's Friday.
Yeah, we were buying shrubs. Because we're getting rid of some old brush around the house, and we're putting in some new. So we're listening on Sirius satellite radio, and we start hearing the newscast, and we start hearing the story about, well, first of all, in Putnam, Connecticut, two armed thugs tried to rob a line of people waiting for the new PlayStation 3 game system to go on sale. That was in Putnam, Connecticut, early Friday. This is at 3:00 in the morning. What the hell? Who lines up to buy a video game? Now, these were not teenagers. These were like adults. These were like, one of the guys shot is, what does it say here? He's 21 years old. Another person shot, was beaten up, was 23. 30 miles away from Putnam, Connecticut, in Manchester, a shopper was beaten and robbed of his new PlayStation 3 just minutes after he bought it. Now the story goes on, but who makes PlayStation? Who is it?
I think it's Sony.
Is it Sony? There are short supplies of PlayStation 3 in strong demand, so there's lots of lines. I've noticed a couple of stories about this the other night. I thought, what the hell is going on? What you know? Well, it's Christmas. You know, it's Jesus' birthday, so it's time to line up to buy crap like this, utter crap like this, in recognition of the birth of the baby Jesus Christ. And it's also the counter. Reality to that is if people are going to line up to buy this kind of crap at 3 o'clock in the morning, then they deserve to be beaten and robbed and shot, according to these criminals. 3 a.m. Two gunmen in Putnam, Connecticut, a town of about 9,000 residents, northeast Connecticut. There were 20 people standing outside a Walmart store. So these thugs pull up and demand money from everybody. One of the patrons resisted and was shot. He's alive. It's not life-threatening, apparently. In the Manchester attack, a shopper told police five men surrounded him, beat him as he left the shops at Buckland Hills with his new PlayStation. In Palmdale, California, authorities shut down a super Walmart after some shoppers got rowdy late Wednesday, pushing and shoving, trying to get these filthy pieces of garbage. In West Bend, Wisconsin, 19-year-old man was injured when he ran into a pole racing with 50 others for one of 10 spots outside a Walmart to get one of these filthy pieces of garbage. In Lexington, Kentucky, someone fired BB pellets from a passing vehicle at people standing in a huge line outside a Best Buy store. A reporter for WKYT television who was interviewing jerks in this line, she got grazed by one of the pellets. In Boston at a Best Buy, aware that it only had 140 of these pieces of garbage, the employees got smart. They gave out tickets to the first 140 people. The first 140 people in line, so everyone would go home until the store opened. What I would no more stand in line to buy a chunk of garbage like this than I would open a vein. The last time I stood in line for something, I think, was for tickets to see The Who here in Atlanta in 1975. What? You know, I don't quite get this. Now, a lot of people say, well, Malloy, it's just because you're so damn stupid. You know, these things cost $400. You can go buy one, put it on eBay, and make $2,000. More than that?
They bidding.
It's a game!
Someone bid $30,000 for
$30,000
on eBay. You can get at least $4,000.
These people deserve to die, Kathy. They should be deconstructed and whatever mental energy it should be wired into a PlayStation 4. So they spend the rest of their lives sitting there going beep beep boom boom beep beep boom 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 beep beep. All their mental energy ought to be drained out and forced into a circuit board or whatever the hell they use inside these things. What is this?
It doesn't sound to me like you have the proper Christmas spirit. It's all about celebrating the tiny baby Jesus.
The Pentagon has upgraded homosexuality, and I have a thing here about... I have a couple of homo stories tonight. For all our homo listeners... So stick around for that. Also, a story about Mike Tyson for all our freakoid listeners. Why do people stand in line to buy a PlayStation 3? There's no justification to this. Kathy, you are going to be the evolutionary biologist or a nurse or some damn thing. What is there in the evolutionary development of humankind that makes people stand online 3 a.m. to get shot for a game box? Can you tell me?
Something about rarity and competition for limited resources.
Oh, Jesus.
And selfish genes.
We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Whom angels greet with anthems sweet.
border to border and coast to coast, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
21 past the hour. The Pentagon has decided to upgrade homosexuality. It's no longer a mental disorder. Now it's just a defect. When was homosexuality declared just another part of being human by the American Psychological Association, Kathy? When was it? Back in the 70s? Late 60s, early 70s? This is from America Blog. It was written by Joe in D.C. He writes, because the Pentagon has nothing better to do these days, the military brain trust has been spending a lot of time thinking about homos. The great minds of the military have decided gays aren't suffering from mental disorders anymore, but they still think homosexuality is a defective condition. Now, according to the Pentagon, their guidelines have classified homosexuality as a mental disorder and put it among a list of conditions or, quote, circumstances, end quote, that range from bedwetting to fear of flying. The new rules are related to the military's retirement practices. The change does not affect the don't ask, don't tell. No, that's a successful policy. That prohibits officials from inquiring about the sex lives of service members. What a farce that's been. I have read that thousands of men and women who are trying to faithfully serve their country have been outed by their commanders and discharged for no reason other than, oh, never mind. So anyway, where does our nation's military not rate homosexuality? Well, it's lumped in with these conditions: stammering or stuttering, dyslexia, sleepwalking, motion sickness, obesity, insect venom allergies, and homosexuality. Those are all rated together. And as Joe in D.C. writes, you can't make this stuff up. And then a quick note to the military. Hey, guys, all the branches are chock full of gays and lesbians. They do the job. You need them, and our country needs them, so shut up. Quit obsessing about gay people and try to figure out how to prevail in Afghanistan and Iraq. The best way to do that would be to get the hell out and stop participating in wars that are immoral, illegal, and fattening. Jesus. We had a caller the other night. Remember that guy? I come in peace. Remember that guy who didn't understand about Scandinavia? Albert writes, for the caller who just can't find any success stories in Scandinavian countries, I guess this successful Oslo museum exhibit won't do much to convince him. This is from the BBC. In Oslo, Norway, curators of an exhibition there on homosexuality among animals has been well received. The exhibition has been well received despite initial indications of strong opposition. Now, the reason I mention this is because back or whenever the issue of people happen to be gay come up, you hear these right-wing idiots saying, well, you don't find homosexuality in nature. And of course you do. But that's like the guy that said, well, the Scandinavian countries are a failure. I mean, you can't convince these people. The Oslo Natural History Museum opened the show last week and says it has been well attended, especially by families. Organizers reported early criticism of the project and being told by one opponent that they would burn in hell. Oh, well, there's an original statement. You're going to burn in hell. I wonder how you say that in Norwegian. But there has been strong interest, according to the BBC, in an aspect of animal behavior the museum says is quite common. The museum says homosexuality has been observed among 1,500 species, and that in 500 of those species, it is well documented. Now, the exhibit is called Against Nature, with a question mark. It includes photographs of one male giraffe. No, I can't say that. Of apes. No, I can't say that either. And two aroused male right whales rubbing against each other. The museum says, quote, we hope to reject the all too well-known argument that homosexual behavior is a crime against nature. A statement from the exhibition says, homosexuality is a common and widespread phenomenon in the animal world, not only short-lived sexual relationships, but even long-lasting partnerships that may last a lifetime. The museum says it is the first exhibition in the world to touch on a subject that has been taboo in the past. It goes on to say that sex between animals, as between humans, is often a matter of enjoyment rather than procreation, and that this applies to animals of the same sex as well as opposite sexes. You know, this kind of ties in. I subscribe to Harper's, and in Harper's Index this month, one of those little items, you know, they've got the whole page of items. I'm not talking about the back page where they have the newly, you know, discoveries, but on the index page, it says that 64% of women report the ability to have orgasms with their male partners, and 78% of women report the ability to have orgasms with their female partners. So, you know, You want some more? Okay, let's take a break. Let's stop for a moment and dance, and then we'll come back and finish this one up. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's more of Mike Malloy.
Twenty-six before the hour. So the exhibit in Oslo, Norway, at the museum there, the Oslo Natural History Museum, of its the title of it is "Against Nature?" Question mark. And it shows I don't know how, I guess photographs of homosexuality in among animals, just like humans. The question came up that homosexuality appears to contradict evolutionary imperatives. That's usually, you know, isn't that what these Christian freaks usually say?
Well, God created Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve.
You know, like, oh, okay, well, that settles that. Scientists involved in the exhibition say that homosexuality appears to do no harm regarding evolutionary imperatives and may actually help in some circumstances. How, you may ask? Well, for example, sometimes a pair of male birds may rear eggs donated, quote, by a female. In the case of flamingos, for instance, the exhibition states, quote, two males can hold a much larger territory than a regular flamingo pair, thus more chicks can grow up. In some colonies, end of quote, in some colonies, as many as 1 in 10 pairs of penguins may be same-sex, while, according to the exhibition, in some animals, the whole species is bisexual. That gives bonobo, is that how you pronounce it, bonobo chimpanzees, a decided evolutionary advantage. Blah, 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 blah. Peter Bachman, who is a zoologist who helped put the show together, admitted that there is a political motive to this. He says in Norway there was a desire among publicly funded museums to be deliverers of truth and to put on display controversial subjects, things that are not said and are swept under the carpet. The museum says that one of its aims is to help demystify homosexuality among people. He says, we hope to reject the all too well-known argument that homosexual behavior is a crime against nature. Yeah, I, you know, how much longer? I know I won't live long enough to see this ridiculous time-consuming, time-wasting debate to be finally resolved about homosexuality. And really, it doesn't matter whether it is a genetic condition or a choice. Or it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And I maintain that, I've said this before, that probably all of us, I hate to make sweeping generalizations, who, me? But probably all of us are somewhere on a sliding scale of our sexual orientation. Way over here on one side of the graph would be exclusively homosexual. Way over here on the other side of the graph would be exclusively heterosexual. And most human beings are kind of on a sliding scale, depending on the circumstances. I mean, that's been my take after years and years and years of hearing all the garbage about this topic. Moving from the sublime to the utterly insane, did you see this? World Entertainment News Network, and it was picked up by TV News, and it was picked up by Raw Story. com. Former boxing champion Mike Tyson is to become a, quote, male escort, close quote, after agreeing to work at legendary Hollywood madam Heidi Fleiss's new legalized brothel for women. In other words, he's going to be a whore. Fleiss bought 60 acres of land in Nevada, and Tyson's work, is scheduled to begin on Heidi's, what she's calling the stud farm. She's going to have a whorehouse for men, whorehouse for women. She says she has high hopes for Tyson, once a heavyweight champion of the world, despite the fact that he is a convicted rapist. Heidi Fleiss says, "I told him, Mike, you're going to be my big stallion." That sounds like a line out of the book Mandingo, doesn't it? Do any of y'all remember that book Mandingo from way back in the 70s? "But them big old black slaves down there in Georgia, you're going to be my big stallion."
Actually, it sounds like something Lynn Cheney would write.
"You're going to be my big stallion, Mike." Heidi Fleiss goes on to say, "It's every man's fear that the girlfriend will go for Mike Tyson." Oh, my God. There was a time where it was every man's fear that their girlfriend would be raped by Mike Tyson, but...
Yeah, cover your ears, literally.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It just occurred to me, on the West Coast, it's only 6:30, and we're talking like this. If you got kids in the car, please put them out on the side of the road and let them find their own way home. Tyson, who is now 40 years old, adds to this story, "I don't care what any man says. It's every man's dream to please every woman and get paid for it," end quote. Now, he didn't say it exactly like that. I sound way too white to impersonate Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson probably said something like, "I don't care what any man. I don't care
what any man says. It's every man's dream to please a woman. And if I ever see, if I had a whole few, I'll bite his other goddamn ear off, too."
How you got me now?
This is insane. See, it's Friday night on the Malloy program. This kind of stuff just backs up in the commode all during the week. And then at the end of the week, we just have to do it. We have to do it. Uh-oh, okay, now we're getting into serious stuff now, right? Oh, Jesus. Okay. All right. So, do we have anything to bridge, going from this garbage into the serious stuff, Kathy? This might be a decent bridge story. Every year the Agriculture Department puts out the report that measures the access to food that we have in this country. This year the report decided not to use the word hunger. And the reason is because hunger is not a scientifically accurate term. That's according to Bush, some freak appointed by Bush at the U.S. Department of Agriculture says, hungry is not a scientifically accurate term. As if the Bush crime family cares a tinker's damn about scientifically accurate terms? What is this? They take stuff off of websites, government websites that are scientifically accurate, and replace it with right-wing gibberish. This guy says we don't have a measure of that condition, hunger. So what do they call it now? They don't call it hungry. They call it very low food security. Very low food security. In the past, we've always identified people who do not have adequate caloric intake or food as being hungry. Now they are suffering from very low food security. Don't you want to smash somebody's face in when you hear this? Don't you? I'm seriously. Go ahead, admit it. You want me to admit it for you? Okay, I'll be the fall guy. Yeah, I want to pick up a 2x4 and just crush someone when I see that the Bush crime family says, okay, we don't have people who are hungry in America anymore. We just have people who suffer from very low food security. 35 million people According to the Bush crime family, which means that that's, you never know about the figure, could not put food on the table at least part of last year. I wonder if they have that problem in Scandinavia. What do you think, Kathy? Well, probably, you know, they're running out to look at the homo exhibits in museums. They probably don't care about food in Scandinavia, right? Oh, my God. Millions of people reported going hungry at times. Who do you report you're hungry to? Where do you go? Is there a report? Is there an 800 number? How do people report? Hello, operator, I'm hungry. Where do you report this stuff? Where do they get these numbers? Beginning this year, the United States Department of Agriculture has determined, quote, very low food security, end quote, to be more a more scientifically palatable description for that group, you know, the hungry group. Scientifically palatable? Oh, no, that's kind of a that's cute. That's a little joke put in there, isn't it? Huh? Scientifically palatable. The number of hungriest Americans has risen. No, don't say hungry. This is from the Washington Post. Don't say hungry. The number of very low food security Americans has risen over the past 5 years. Last year, the total share of food insecure households stood at 11%. This year it's 12%. Among several recommendations, this panel of Bush appointees suggested that the Department of Agriculture scrap the word hunger, which, quote, should refer to a potential consequence of food insecurity that, because of prolonged involuntary lack of food, results in discomfort, illness, weakness, or pain that goes beyond the usual uneasy sensation, end quote. I swear to God, one of these days you're going to pick up your local paper and it'll say talk show host in Atlanta goes berserk, attacks people on a Walmart line waiting to buy PlayStation, screaming something about food insecurity, being held without bond, 9 dead. To measure hunger, the Department of Agriculture determined the government would have to ask individual people whether, quote, lack of eating led to these more severe conditions, end quote. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. This is in the Washington Post. I do not make anything up on this program. Nothing. Not homo exhibits in Oslo, Norway, or riots on PlayStation lines, or food insecurity.
You're working hard to put food on your family.
It's always gonna be a delicacy. So lift your chops and eat the meat.
I'm thrilled to be here in the breadbasket of America because it gives me a chance to remind our fellow citizens that we have an advantage here in America. We can feed ourselves.
Well, not all of us, George. But never mind. It's just food insecurity. It's not hunger. All right. Now, let me back up a little bit. I've got a real good email here from Reese in West Virginia about the PlayStation gaming thing, which was our first or second item on tonight's rant. Reese writes, as a video gamer myself, hell, I'm even listening to you on my Xbox, you can't get more hardcore gamer than that, I'm very disturbed by these rich snobs that you described, which was right on the money, by the way, that waited for days just to get, just to either A, be the elite few that got a that for a few months can say to mere peasants like myself, I got a PS3 and you don't. Nah, 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 nah. Someone fetch me a 12-gauge, please. Clear his throat. Or B, the greedy few that will want to take advantage of the insanity by selling it on eBay for ungodly sums of money reaching up to five-figure numbers. It's beyond pathetic, and it gives us normal gamers a bad name. But I have to disagree with you on one major point. I have to say This most likely has nothing to do with Christmas. No parent will ever spend $600 on a game console for his or her kid. It's beyond spoiling the child. Well, now, wait a second. Didn't you tell me today, Kathy, that you heard Sean Hannity? What was that you told me about?
I was listening to Neil Bortz, mm-hmm. actually, because there's nothing else in Atlanta to listen to at that hour.
And you were working around paint thinner.
I was working around paint thinner, so, you know, brain waves weren't functioning. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he was talking about the baby Jesus and how he overheard,
that would be Hannity.
Correct. And how he heard a conversation with the baby Jesus and a caller. The caller was in line at a Walmart or Best Buy or one of the mega stores and offered to give his... What is it?
PlayStation 3.
I don't even know.
Sell his to Sean Hannity.
Well, he was going to give it to Sean Hannity because he loves the baby Jesus and the baby Jesus. So Hannity said, no, I can't let you do that. I'll buy it from you for $3,000 for my son. for my son.
For his son. Okay. So, Reese in West Virginia, when you say no parent will ever spend $600 on a game console for his or her kid, it's beyond spoiling the child. I give you Sean Hannity, and you can give him back. Reese goes on, seriously, ask any parent. It's greed, plain and simple, and worst of all, Sony knows this. That's why they only produce 600,000 units for Japan and the United States combined, 400,000 here, 200,000 there. Screw Europe. They got to wait until March. They're much like the Republican neocons, out of touch, hemorrhaging cash, faulty strategy, and stomping all over anyone they think opposes them. I guess he's talking about Sony, right? I think you're doing great. Keep up the good work. And here's to hoping Bush stays in Vietnam. Reese. Thanks, Reese. In St. Albans, West Virginia. All right, that's the last comment on the PlayStation 3, and then this is the last comment on the gay animal story. I love stories like that, I really do. And this comes from Prairie 2. Hey, Mike, any farmer will tell you that it's standard practice to tell when it's time to breed each cow by the other females that are trying to have sex with her. Most dairy cows are bred by artificial means, so it's the only way to time the artificial breeding properly. The bulls are very dangerous, so they're all kept by farms that specialize in collecting the bull's contribution. At collection time, the bull knows the drill. A brave individual steps in with the collection container. I'm not kidding, he writes, as the bull mounts a decoy. The bull is given his choice of a padded dummy, a cow, a steer, or another bull. Most bulls prefer anything but a cow. Okay. All right. Have we had enough of this for tonight?
Are you talking about Mike Tyson again? Whoa. How do you like it?
Mike Tyson and oh, never mind. This is...
I want to kiss your ear. Come here.
This is... The program is spiraling out of control tonight. I know people that look to this program for insightful political observations and screaming and commentary are sitting there going, Jesus, God, let's watch ABC television. You know, let's switch over and watch 2020.
Well, the problem is, and this is something that you and I discussed in the car on the way to buy those little tiny trees today,
yeah.
And it's that this is, you're right, they're incredibly important news articles out there, items to be discussed, and no one's talking about them. This
know,
is what
right.
You go to the CNN website, there's not even a you wouldn't know Bush was in Vietnam. Of course, you wouldn't have known he was there 30 years ago, but
yeah.
And so this is what they're talking about. PlayStation, Mike Tyson.
Television. And the Walmart shootings.
Right.
And the other thing they're talking about, and we're going to get into this a little bit when we come back after the top of the hour break here, is the all the conversation about the negative conversation about Nancy Pelosi setting up her leadership and the positive conversation on television I'm talking about Trent Lott and Mitch McConnell setting up their leadership. Now, what we were talking about today, Kathy and I, was this very clear, and a couple of books have been written on this, about how the right wing and their allies in media, especially allies in media, are into framing. They frame the issues in a certain way, and that's how it is discussed. We listened on Sirius Satellite Radio today to CNN. We also listened to some Fox as we're driving around. And the way the two stories, the Democrats are choosing their leadership, the Republicans are choosing their leadership, the way those two stories were framed was astonishing and very clear as to what the bias is in media. We'll talk about that when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. So we're out and about today, and the topic came up between Kathy and me about framing. For the past several days, we have watched how all the networks, ABC, CBS, NBC, all the cable networks, MSNBC, CNN, Fox, all of them, even C-SPAN, how they have framed the selection process by which the Republicans chose their leadership for the new Congress and the Democrats chose theirs. In every single example, the Democrats were involved in poor leadership, a catfight, a fight to the death, betrayal, lies, deceit, backstabbing, crimes against humanity, on and on and on. The Republicans, on the other hand, we're having an orderly transition of power from majority party to minority. Now, let me just give you one example. Trent Lott was voted into the number two position with a one vote difference. I think it was 26 to 25. It really doesn't matter what the actual number was. It was one vote difference, 26 to 25, which would indicate that the Republican caucus in the United States Senate is riven right down the middle. Christ, how are they going to be able to do anything? Half of them wanted Trent, half of them didn't. Oh my God, what does this mean? It's horrifying. Whereas over on the Democratic side, Steny Hoyer, by a margin of 2 or 3 to 1, was given the number two position, or voted for the number two position by the Democratic caucus, which would clearly indicate that the Democratic Party is, as the Democratic Party always is, got differences of opinion within the caucus. I'm talking about the politicians now, but are on the same page where it concerns leadership. Now, what was particularly galling to me over the past few days is the way Nancy Pelosi's leadership was attacked. I don't care what you think of Nancy Pelosi. On some issues, I agree with her. Some issues, I disagree with her. But her leadership had nothing to do with the selection of Steny Hoyer over Jack Murtha. As far as I know, and I don't know completely, Nancy Pelosi did not wend her way through the new Democratic caucus in the U.S. House, biting necks and twisting arms and telling people, "Vote for Murtha, you son of a bitch!" I don't think she did that at all. That's what Republicans do. Nancy Pelosi said, "I back Murtha," for a number of reasons. Now, Murtha and Pelosi are as far apart as night and day on so many issues. Gun control, abortion, all those wedge issues that the Republicans love to use to separate Americans from each other every election cycle. Murtha believes one way, Pelosi believes another. They would not have made good allies at the top. Steny Hoyer and Nancy Pelosi, on the other hand, are in agreement on most issues. So the two of them will work together just fine, thank you. Now, either way, no matter which man wins after Pelosi has backed Murtha, Pelosi wins. It doesn't matter. It's a win-win situation for her. How? She has shown to the Democratic caucus that when somebody shows her loyalty, she will show it back, i.e., Murtha. She has also shown that she is not threatened when someone is elected by the majority of the members of the Democratic caucus because they want that man to be the leader. Nancy Pelosi comes out, shakes his hand, has a smile on her face, and goes about the business of organizing the rest of the Democratic caucus in the U.S. House. Now, that's how it came down in the real world. In television land, with the pundits, it is framed like this. The Republicans had an orderly transfer from my majority to minority party. We are not going to mention to you that that racist pig from Mississippi has worked his way up to the number two position once again. We're not going to talk about that. We're not going to talk about the fact that Trent Lott and Mitch McConnell are both from the deep south. Oh, I know. Kentucky is Kentucky. We're not going to talk. We're not going to talk about the tremendous split difference of opinion regarding Trent Lott. We're not going to talk about it. We're just going to tell you, you see, because we are the liberal media. We're going to tell you about the orderly, gentlemanly transition of power for the Republicans. As far as the Democrats are concerned, oh, Jesus, God, we're going to get think tank people in here. We're going to get James Carville. We're going to get this one and that one. We're going to talk about it all day and all night and all yesterday and all last week. The Democratic Party is floundering. The Democratic Party can't get its leadership together. Nancy Pelosi has been defeated. Nancy Pelosi is backed the wrong horse. Jack Murtha this and Steny Hoyer that. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. And there's no story there to begin with. There's no story there. What's the story? Here's the story.
On the top of the news today, the Democrats caucused and elected their leaders, and the Republicans caucused and elected theirs. Storms raged across New England today, ripping down power lines and sending thousands. That's the story. That's it.
But the way it is framed, you see, framing is everything. And already the media in this country, especially television, has put America on notice once again where their sympathies are going to lie and what they are going to try to do. Their sympathies lie with corporatism. And what they are going to try to do is to frame every single issue that comes up to make the Republicans look orderly and the Democrats chaotic, in the hope that in 2 years, when congressional elections are held again for the U.S. House and a third of the Senate and the President, we can get back to the business of America, which is corporate fascism. So be on guard, truth seeker. And start paying attention. This is a whole new area for me, too, framing. How an issue is framed by the media. How they present it. This is the primer for you right here. Is it primer or primer? This is the primer for you. How this election, these two elections of the House caucuses of the Democrats and the Republicans, how they were handled. This shows you, with not a bit of doubt, how media, especially television, is determined to brainwash you and influence you into believing, in this instance, the Democrats are chaotic, the Republicans are orderly. Who wants chaos?
I don't.
You want order, right?
Yes. Okay.
Just like the way the issue of the stolen 2000 election was framed. Now, most of us weren't familiar with framing back then. But remember how the media, especially television, eventually the newspapers did the same thing. Well, it's time to forget about this. Let's just get on. Look, the election's over. The votes were counted. The votes were not counted. The counting was stopped. And when a counting was finally effected, a percentage of the counting, it proved beyond any doubt that Al Gore was the winner of the 2000 presidential election. Now, who talks about, we can't talk about that here at the New York Times or on NBC or here at CNN. We can't talk about that because that will divide the country. That's divisive. That's a filthy lie. They can't talk about it because in their addled brains, the corporatists do not reside in the Democratic Party. They reside in the Republican Party. What is CNN? It is not a news gathering organization. It is a corporation, a media conglomerate, whose only interest is to make sure they make a profit. Period. End of story. Framing. Please start paying attention, because I am. I'm not coming at this from an arrogant, hey, I'm your teacher, you're my students. No, that's what Limbaugh does. I'm saying we're all students. It's finally broken through to me how important framing is. Framing an issue, framing a discussion, putting stuff out there for me to digest by this corrupt, filthy right-wing media. It's 21 past the hour. This is funny. This is from Cindy in Washington State. She writes, Mike, I certainly I apologize profusely for sounding like I'm correcting you. I certainly am not. You asked the question, is it primer or primer? So I'll answer that for your convenience. Primer means the book. Primer means a coat of paint under the final coat. Forgive me, please. I don't mean to be rude. I can never keep primer and primer straight. All right. Framing. We're really being suckered, aren't we? So anyway, Kathy and I are having this discussion about this very topic today as we cruised around out here in the country trying to find this place where they sold the, what do you call them, little trees? Shrubs, that's right. And we're talking about how easy it is for especially television and radio, and even for that matter, to a lesser extent, because newspapers are, there's debate whether it's a hot medium or cool medium. Some people say it's a hot medium because it puts the story out there and you take it into your head. Other people say it's a cool medium because as you read, you form your own images. So a cool medium is usually one you have to get involved with, whereas hot medium is one that just comes at you. But we were talking about how our perception of certain issues, hers and mine, and we are in this business, how our perception of certain issues is totally corrupted by what we see and hear. When we're focusing on a newscast, now I know the quick answer is turn it off. Well, we can't turn it off because this is what we do for a living. And what we hope we're doing when we do these programs is try to deconstruct the garbage that's been put out there for public consumption. In other words, the framing. But what we were both willing to acknowledge to each other was how easily she and I have our opinions or our perceptions totally corrupted by mass media. Now, this is not a new topic. I mean, my God, the negative influence of mass media reports on that started back in the 50s. So this is not a new issue. What is new about it is all of a sudden, the corruption of mass media has not to do strictly with the entertainment that's put out there, but has to do with the politics. How we perceive the political structure within which we've got to make intelligent survival decisions. And it's astonishing. It's painful. It's scary. And again, it's another one of those topics that makes me want to pick up a baseball bat and try to find somebody to just, you know, just say, oh, it's your fault. Bang! It's incredible. Just like partial birth abortion. BZ in Palm Springs sent this to me. Talking about a different topic, scientific terms. We're talking about, they're not going to talk about hunger because it's not a scientific term. BZ writes, of course, the Bush administration has no idea that in the medical profession there is no such term as partial birth abortion. That's correct. It's called intact DNX or intact dilation and extraction. But that whole issue was framed. Aren't you glad that issue is, for the most part, gone? It's a horrifying experience for a woman to go through. And yet it was framed. I mean, my God, the pictures, the discussion, the attack on a woman's right to privacy based around partial birth abortion. This is what they do. This is what they do to us. Frankly, I'm sick of it. So, okay, you're sick of it. So what? Well, okay. The only thing I can do is this was the final part of the discussion today, because just about at this point we found the place you're looking for and went in to buy the little trees. And the bottom line for us, Kathy and me, is to listen more intently, not necessarily to the news story. We can get that from the BBC. We can get that from Al Jazeera. We can get that from MSNBC.com. We can get that online where nobody is screaming at us. Listen to how the story is being framed. Listen to the adjectives and adverbs that are being used by the commentators. Listen to the discussion when they get the talking heads on. Not what they are saying. I don't give a tinker's damn what these so-called experts say. They don't influence me. Sometimes it gets entertaining if they try to reach across and throttle each other. But listen to how it's framed. That's what we have to do. We can't sit back anymore and allow a hot medium to wash over us and think we're getting information. We've got to change everything into medium cool, where we take it in, immediately dissect it, break it down, deframe it.
Tell me who is our enemy. They say that we are free and we must fight to be number one. So when the army calls, I'll grab my TV, my car, and my gun.
Truth, justice, and the American way. It's more of Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour. Bob in Miami sent me a link. I should know this. Now I do. I just put it in my favorite places. It's the Frame Shop, a website run by Jeffrey Feldman. Check this out. FrameShopIsOpen.com. During the break, I was taking a look at what he's got here. FrameShopIsOpen.com, and it's exactly what we've been sitting here talking about. So take a look. FrameShopIsOpen.com, and thanks to Bob in Miami for sending me the link. Hadn't heard of this one. That's good. Thanks, Bob. Phone calls. I'm sorry. I'm doing it again, aren't I? Let's do some phone calls here. Let's start with Sean, who is called in from Jacksonville, Florida. Sean, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. Good evening. How you doing?
Doing fine, sir. How are you?
Fine. I'm so happy to have you back. I didn't know what to do. I was like, I was going crazy.
I'll tell you what to do. Just tell your friends, tell people, and call your local talk station in Jacksonville, and say, hey, put the Malloy, put Nova M on, not just me, just the whole network. We have all kinds of people available. But other than that, why you really called?
Yeah, I called because I'm sort of happy that you, along with, I guess her name was Amy Goodman, talked about the 9/11 investigation. And I won't beat a dead horse, but it's kind of cool that someone in the media is not ashamed or, afraid to just speak up and say, well, you know what, maybe we can look into this. And that was something that you and only a handful of other people ever did to speak out. But the one thing I wanted to ask you, because you know a lot about media, have you heard anybody talk about whether or not they've already thought that all of these investigations will be in vain because they've already issued the pardons? That's why I'm sort of hoping that the Dems wouldn't get involved with all these investigations, because what I would bet, I'd bet money that Dick Cheney's already pardoned, because you got to remember, he actually was president for like an afternoon or something, and it came back when a friend said, well, he may have pardoned everybody. And that could very well be, because for one afternoon, I think they swore in Dick Cheney because the president was getting a colonoscopy or something crazy. I can't remember.
He was, but I don't think that Bush or Cheney would have issued pardons and nobody would know about it in the first place. It would be political suicide. In the second place, even if, they probably will. I think the last thing that Bush will do when he leaves office, if these investigations are held, if people are found to be culpable, if not guilty, he will issue the pardons. Then it will become clear to the American public just how evil and venal and vile this administration is.
Yeah.
So I say, let the pardons come. Let them come.
Well, do you think that there were any other maybe national security directives? I've always wondered, does anybody know what, when he was president for those hour, what he actually signed under his own hand? That's what I've been dying to find out.
Well, I don't know, but I would imagine probably not very much. It is not uncommon, as a matter of fact, the provisions in the Constitution, although it has been expanded a bit, because obviously when the Constitution was written, or when these amendments were added, there was no such thing as a colonoscopy, among other things. When Eisenhower, Nixon was president for a while, during Eisenhower's second term, when Eisenhower had a heart attack. So it is not uncommon.
Oh, okay.
It's not uncommon for this to happen, and I wouldn't read too much into it. As far as investigations, I would hope they're investigations. I hope the evidence points in a certain direction. And then I hope that Bush does what Gerald Ford had to do and what Ronald Reagan had to do. Pardon. All these criminals.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
So. Yeah, because someone had said, and I was under the impression that they said that, there had been people that had stood in, but there had never been a declared transfer of all presidential powers to the vice president until Dick Cheney.
Well,
I guess that's incorrect.
Well, it is incorrect. When Ronald Reagan was shot, George Herbert Walker Bush took over the powers. The vice president took over the powers of the presidency. No, it is not uncommon. It happens if a president goes in for surgery and he's put under general anesthesia. Obviously, the power has to be transferred to somebody, and constitutionally, that'll be the vice president. So it's happened a number of times. All right.
Oh, okay. Thanks a lot.
Okay,
hey,
Sean. Thanks for checking
luck.
It. All right. I appreciate it. Take care. Take care. This is kind of amazing. One of the things we talked about at the very top of the program tonight were the shootings at Walmart in these lines. It's not, the violence of people crushing each other to get these PlayStation 3s. Type into your Google search engine, Walmart shooting. I did that, and I came up with 2,190,000 hits. 190,000 results. Just do it. Walmart shooting. Oh, my God. Jody is calling from Arlington Heights, Illinois. Hey, Jody.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Long time no talk.
Yeah, I know. Good to hear from you again.
Yeah. I'm calling about this food security, very low food security. Talk about framing.
Yeah, there you go.
One thing I noticed already, the old term, when they even talked about it, was food insecurity.
Right.
And they've changed the word to security.
Right.
And so, of course, it sounds even better. The other thing is...
Doesn't it just infuriate you?
Well, and I know why they went away from hunger. Because, you know, even though these right-wing Bible thumpers, and believe me, I'm a churchgoer, but my church believes in taking care of the hungry. It's
yes.
biblical framing. And when you, and some of these even right, more right-wing churches were starting to come around on some of the issues that revolve taking care of the hungry and the poor a little bit. We wouldn't want to use that word because it sounds too biblical, and it will bring them in.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
if you get rid of it, then it sounds like, well, we don't know what that, it's a non-term.
Mm-hmm.
It's a non-term. I even looked up their report while I was on waiting for you.
Uh-huh.
And they recommended using hunger until the very end when they said, oh, you know, they've been sending out surveys for more than 10 years. They're talking to people. Wasn't one of the things in the article, well, that's an individual physiological description?
Mm-hmm.
No, it isn't. Bread for the World, which is one of the leaders in hunger, you know, advocacy,
mm-hmm.
calls it, you know, where you don't get enough nutrients and households to provide for your life.
Right.
That's pretty easy to tell, actually.
Sure.
So this is just, I mean, it just infuriates me. And I'll tell you what I'm going to do about it. I am going to go to my church, and I'm going to get as many people to write letters to the you know, Department of Agriculture,
right,
and let them have it. And I'm going to contact other churches, and I'm going to try to do the same thing. Because
yeah, Jesus didn't say clothe the naked, heal the sick,
and the very low food secure,
and feed the very low food secure. No, he never said that.
Right.
Did he?
Right, and that's really why I think they're switching from that word.
I think they're doing it because they don't want to. This is, as you point out, another example of framing. If they admit that there are 35 million people in this country who in the last 12 months experienced some hunger,
right.
hunger sounds like Darfur. Hunger
right.
sounds like some country in Africa. Hunger sounds like Indonesian people fighting for their independence against the government of that. You know, so they don't. It's strictly to make Bush look better, in my opinion.
Well, it also hides the fact that that group that they're discussing, the hungry, I'm going to call them, didn't change and actually increased. But the ones maybe slightly above that who have some food, you know, basically can get along but are not really satisfied, that has been called the food insecure.
Right.
Those people have slightly decreased according to their statistics.
Well, that's according to their statistics.
Right, and they're the only ones we really have. I mean, that's what the ones most of these people rely on, although they do look at other organizations do their own surveys.
But, you know, what is horrifying, Jody, is that in the United States of America tonight, you and I are sitting here acknowledging even the government figures that 35 million people did not get enough food to eat, no matter how they frame it or what words they use.
I know.
And the
number of children in that is really sad.
Oh, my God. I would venture that they are the majority.
They are. They're at least two-thirds of it.
Well, there you go.
And they even said, here's a really sad thing that I just saw in this little report they gave.
Yeah.
They're even claiming that the hungry might be underreported because parents are so ashamed of the fact that they aren't able to feed their children, that they underreport how much food they're not reporting really how little their kids are getting.
Yeah.
Now, that's pretty sad.
It is sad.
And that's right in the federal report that I'm looking at. And that, you know, I'm giving it, the quick lineup. I'm not giving their stupid language that makes
right.
no sense, but that really jumped out at me.
I wonder if 12% of the population in Scandinavia is hungry.
I don't think so.
I suppose we could find
it if we looked it up.
Yeah, well.
All right, Mike.
Thanks, Jody.
Don't be a stranger.
Good to hear from you.
Bye.
All right, take care. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
You got to rob me.
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
Ten before the hour. Oh, there is another place you can go about framing. I sent you to the frame shop is open because it's very visual. But TVNewsLies.org has been talking about this for forever. Matter of fact, got an email here from Reg that says we have more than 400 pages on this topic, and we spent more than 4 years screaming about media framing. Half a story is a whole lie. So if you want to get some in-depth information about framing, now I don't mean to come across like this is a brand new topic. I know Tom Hartman has talked about it. I know George Lakoff has talked about it. TV News Lies has talked about it. On and on and on and on. All I'm trying to do here is admit, number one, that it's an issue that we've not addressed on this program. That's always in the back of every single story that you see or hear, and in the back of most stories that you read. In journalism, the focus is put on the lead. You're supposed to have a good lead, a good first paragraph, a good closing paragraph, and whatever garbage you want to put between those two paragraphs is up to you. But the lead, the initial impact, the grabber, the sentence, or the first paragraph that grabs someone's attention immediately frames the story in their mind. But TVNewsLies.org, Tom Hartman, George Lakoff, the website I just gave you, it's just an issue that has not gotten a lot of attention, that people a lot smarter than you and me have been working on for a long time, trying to put it out there, trying to let people know, look, you've got to understand something. You are being, it's what George Romney, Mitt Romney's father said, George Romney, way back in 1968 when he wanted to run for president. He was a supporter of the war, Republican. He went to Vietnam, he came back and he said, I've been brainwashed by here in my own country about what was really going on. Now, he wasn't brainwashed by media. He was brainwashed by the Johnson administration and Nixon administration eventually. So they called it brainwashing back then. Now it's called framing. If there are six choices and you are only aware of two because you go to a certain choice provider, let's call mainstream media, the choice, and you're only aware of two choices, you invariably are probably going to choose wrong because you didn't know about the other four. So that's what this issue is about. I'm not trying to sound like a naif who just says, oh my goodness, there's something called framing. I'm just saying it has become the critical, central issue of everything that's discussed in mainstream media. How it is framed, how it's presented to us. And I guess what provoked this from me tonight, you know, finally getting on the pay attention to the framing bandwagon, is this entire week how the selection of the leaders of these two caucuses in the U.S. House and Senate were presented by mainstream media. Democrats, chaotic. Republicans, quiet and orderly. So, back to your phone calls. Let me see here. Will is calling from Michigan. Will, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Will.
I didn't get a chance to listen to you live last Friday because I was at a party for the 231st birthday of the United States Marine Corps.
Oh, that's right. Well, you're a Marine veteran, right?
Actually, I'm a veteran of the Fleet Marine Force, which is a joint command between the Navy and the Marines.
Oh, okay. How was the party?
Oh, it was interesting. They had the cake cutting ceremony as they always do. They bring the oldest and the youngest Marine present at the party up to the stage, and they roll out a cake on a cart and they cut it with a sword, and the oldest and the youngest Marine get the first piece of cake.
Huh.
And
what a nice tradition.
And that was the first celebration of my Veterans Day weekend.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, of course, was Veterans Day, and on Monday, we meaning the local peace activists, got together and read the names of Michigan's war dead again.
Right.
Last time we did that, it was 102. Now it's 105. Ironically, the last Michigan soldier killed in action died on Veterans Day.
Yeah.
And we acknowledged the total fatality count at 2,857.
Mm-hmm.
And the total wounded count is 21,485, approximately 4,300 of those are amputees.
Right.
And it's times like these that make me wish that I was healthy enough to reenlist, because you know, I was a hospital corpsman. It was my job to save lives on the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
And if I could reenlist, I wouldn't do it to serve my country. I'd do it for friends that are over there.
For the soldiers, sure. I understand that.
We got to get out of here, Mike. We got to get out of this war.
Yeah, we do. No matter what it takes, I totally agree. I totally agree. I don't know what else the American public can do short of just open rebellion to make it clear that we need to get out of there. I honestly don't know.
And to top it off, Bush finally goes to Vietnam.
Yeah, how about that? isn't that...
better late than never, I guess.
Well, I'm sure he stood there and said to the North Vietnamese leaders, "Hey, listen, I wasn't one of them come over here and bombed you. Wasn't me. I stayed out of it. You boys?
I guess we can call him Hanoi George now.
I guess we can. Will, thanks for checking in. Take care, all right? Keep your chin up.
Okay.
All right, we'll talk again. All right, Truth Seekers, quick break. We'll be back. Final hour coming up. If you want to get it said tonight or this week on the Molloy Program, now's your chance. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. About 7 past the hour. I'm going to have to drag out all the Moody Blues CDs, Kathy, and have a Moody Blues weekend here, I think. A couple of quick emails and back to your phone calls. This is from Renee. Renee writes, "Hey, Mike, I'm a 14-year-old avid liberal and gamer." This is about the PlayStation 3. "I'm not sure who you quoted saying that Sony was using shortages to increase demand of the PS3, but it's not because of profit in any way. The reason that there are PS3 shortages is because of the hardware. The Blu-ray disc player in the PS3 has been pushing the PS3 launch date back and back. If you have been keeping up with PS3 news," I haven't, Renee, I really haven't, "you would have learned that Sony is actually losing money on the PS3. The actual cost for a PS3 is a whopping $805, much more than the $500 or $600 they're going for. Yes, I do agree that it's disgusting that these people are doing on eBay and such. The PS3 is not like a Cabbage Patch Kid. Sony can't pump these things out like paper. Did you know that Microsoft never made any money on the Xbox? They actually lost $2 billion. Why do people camp outside theaters for the new Star Wars? How about the people camping outside bookstores for Harry Potter? Thanks for listening to my rant. Peace, Renee. Thanks, Renee. I appreciate it. It reminds me, we need to do another teen night here at some point, Kathy. All right, and then this one. Hello, Mike. My husband and I just listened to the podcast where this chap called Mike from Arizona said Scandinavian countries are a failure. When was that, 2 nights ago, Kathy? I have to tell you, I almost exploded at this chap's pig ignorance. I'm from Singapore, and that's way further from Scandinavia than the United States is. I've had IKEA furniture all my life. I've only used Nokia cell phones because they're the best designed. My family's been driving Volvos for years, and my mother has a fine collection of made-in-Scandinavian china that I will inherit eventually. And some of the finest film directors in the world are from Scandinavia. Hang on. ABBA, Bjork, the Hanseatic League. What has this chap been doing all his life? The level of ignorance in this country is so desperately shocking I could cry. I really could. It's great to have you back. Yada yada. Cheers, Ling in Chicago. Thanks, Ling. I appreciate the email. What else we got here? Oh, okay. One more email, then back to your phone calls. This is from China. Hi, Mike and Kathy. I heard you talking about your Aussie and Czech listeners and wouldn't want you to forget about your friends in China. I listen to you every day from Guangzhou, China. I know, I'm mispronouncing it. Guangzhou, China. I've been downloading your show from China every day I can since I've been here, which is around 4 years, and in Los Angeles before then. I originally found you years ago through Shelby LaPrey's radiopower.org, which was loaded onto iTunes. So basically, Apple Computer turned me on to Mike Malloy. I called you from China when you were still at IE America just before that gig ended. Sorry, but I was so nervous that I couldn't put a complete sentence together. So I haven't called back. How embarrassing for someone who earns his living doing public speaking to get stage fright on the telephone. I'm an American expat from L.A. teaching chemistry at Jinan University International School. I'm a 50-ish white guy with a Chinese wife and a 20-month-old half-Chinese, half-American baby boy. He's my first baby, so like David Letterman, I'm an obnoxiously proud Baba, Mandarin for Papa, and have found the true meaning of life. Evolution, not revolution. This little mixed-race guy is so incredibly beautiful. Really wish I could attach a photo. Well, please do. And then he says, this congressional changing of the guard has been given short shrift here on Middle Earth Media. As much as the central government in China loves to fry Bush's wontons anytime they can, they've had to balance that with their even stronger desire to play down elections, especially those that so clearly demonstrate the power of the people. Yeah, I can imagine. This week's heavy rotation on Chinese news, quote, is the latest phony scandal on Taiwan's Chen Shui-bian and Margaret Chan's appointment to Director General of the World Health Organization with their solemn promise of independence from Beijing. The average Chinese intellectual has no idea the election went down, even though they know about Congress. They tend not to be political news junkies. All our love to you, Kathy and Molly. Michael in Guangzhou, China. Thank God Al Gore invented the internets. Hey, Kathy? Huh? Thanks for writing, Michael. For the people who listen via the internet to this program, I know that every program pretty much can be picked up on the internet now if it's web streamed. So it's not like, you know, we're anything special. But when I'm of a generation that when I get hell, if I got a letter from China, I would carry it around for weeks. But to get an email from someone that says I listen to you every day in China, I mean, it really that's still very impressive to me. I don't even know what a PlayStation 3 is. Do you? Huh? You don't either? Kathy's shaking her head. No, don't send me any emails telling me what it is. Fact is, I don't want to know. I can remember my son Chris, who turns 28 this December 22nd. He was a winter solstice baby. When he was little, when he was like 6 or 7 years old, that's when the Mario Brothers video game. When the little video, what were they called back then? Do you remember the video games? Do you know what they were called, Kathy? I just don't remember. But that was when they first came out. And, you know, I wanted to be a good dad. I was a single parent. And so I bought him the equipment, hooked it up to the television, got him a couple of the software, the programs to put in. And he would sit there. And I know the thing I noticed about Chris, who's a great kid, even greater adult. I love this young man to pieces. He's been a fireman. Now he's in nursing school. His wife is going to school to become an environmental attorney. She's got her degree in environmental science. Now she's going to go into environmental law. But I got nervous. He was 7 years old, and he would sit down. He'd come home from school, and the deal was I had to make a deal with him after I noticed what was happening. And the deal was he could spend an hour a day on Mario Brothers or Super Mario, whatever the hell it was. Because what would happen, Chris would sit down in front of this thing and just go into an altered state of reality. Absolutely nothing would penetrate that until I finally would say, Chris, time to stop. So I never got into gaming with the equipment. That's why when I say I don't know what a PlayStation 3 is, I don't even know what an Xbox is. I don't know what this stuff is, and I really don't want to know. I hate to sound like some cultural Luddite, but I'd much rather sit down with a bottle of wine and a book. The video thing, and I realize to a large extent it's a generational thing. I know that people in my son Chris's generation, God only knows what it's going to be like in Molly's generation, Molly, who's now a little over two. But in Chris's generation, it seems like they get a quicker grasp of something. I'm not sure what it is. A quicker grasp of the flow of information, for sure, than I do, people of my generation do. It also seems that people in Chris's generation can analyze data more quickly than, say, people of my generation. Now, I'm not talking about scientific data necessarily, but just data that flows. All that stuff that flows in, flows out. Chris and people in his generation seem to have the ability to deny unnecessary data. They can spot it. They can. Now, I'm not talking about information. I'm talking about data. And there's a difference there. So I guess I never will figure out what an Xbox is, and I really don't give a damn. But as far as PlayStation 3s are concerned, it's astonishing to me that people would stand in line at 3 o'clock in the morning to get one. I mean, we'll be right back. Your phone calls. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
Is significant in its size. Its economy is still small but growing.
They have Chinese food here. Takeout. Back to your phone calls. Oh, God, the guy just irritates the hell out of me. Thank goodness, Kathy, tonight you didn't have any sound from Bush. Our Brooklyn bureau chief is checking in, Maddie Joan. Hey, Maddie.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Fine. Listen, since I'm old and you're old, maybe you'll remember this.
Okay.
1994.
Oh, God, wait a minute. Okay.
Okay. Republicans contract with America, Gingrich sweeps the
yes.
Congress, all this crap, right?
Yes, yes.
So everybody's framing this about Pelosi, but, like, am I the only person that remembers the big tussle between Gingrich and DeLay over the whip position and what disarray there was with the Republicans when they swept into power. I mean, it was like a knife fight.
Was that disarray, or was it just the smooth workings of love and democracy? And
well,
blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, after the memory hole, it's the smooth workings of the Republican Party. But it was like a knife fight.
Oh, I know. It was horrible.
And
horrifying.
So Gingrich wasn't supporting DeLay for the whip position. And then later on, DeLay gets the whip position and then tries to oust Gingrich. I mean, it was a comic soap opera.
Oh, it was, and it was worse than a knife fight. It was just raw, naked power.
Right, but you hear it now, and oh my God, it was like the dream team, and Gingrich had everything under control. And
right. Well, you know what is the other thing? Kathy and I were freaking out about today, is how all of a sudden Gingrich is being asked for comments. You know, this dead man, Newt Gingrich, is there anybody who represents the death of the Republican Party more than Newt Gingrich? This sucker says he's thinking about running for Congress? I mean, running for president?
I hope he does.
Well, that's very true. But, I mean, where do these – he was teaching for a while. He had a course that was being taught. He had put together a bunch of CDs, and there was a professor here at Kennesaw State University here in Georgia.
Not the learning annex.
Well, he's an old college professor from out here in Carrollton, Georgia. But this was a different college, different university, and they got rid of his programs because they were highly political, and it's not what you're supposed to do in a college setting. I don't know what he's been doing since then, except just skulking around. I don't know. He probably is hanging out outside of the women's public urinals and watching people come and go. The guy creeps me out totally, Maddie.
Well, don't say such nice things about him. He might get a big head.
so to speak. Yeah, I know. All right, well, Maddie, thanks for checking
in. Somebody should look into this because I can't remember the details, but it was far, far worse when the Republicans swept Congress in 94.
Oh, it was
anything
awful.
That we're looking at now.
It was awful. It was a naked grab for power between DeLay and Gingrich. And eventually DeLay engineered the overthrow of Gingrich. That's why Gingrich bailed out
in 98,
years later. He just said, well, the hell with you. I'll take my dollies and marbles and go home.
Right, but of course the media is not talking about any of it.
No. Absolutely not. Framing. The new word for me, and it's not new. People have been talking about it for a number of years now. But the new issue that we all should be aware of is framing. How these reports are framed by...
Well, the other thing people are doing is they're calling Murtha the leftist and Hoyer the conservative Democrat, which is ridiculous.
Insane!
Because Hoyer is very liberal, and Murtha, other than his war stance, is... completely a blue dog Democrat.
Absolutely. And would probably fit in very comfortably with the Northeastern Republicans, Murtha. So,
yeah.
Again,
doesn't he caucus with the blue dogs?
He does indeed. So it's not what is happening here. The framing is so totally screwing. And this is the objective. Our perceptions of up is up, down is down, left and right and sideways. Everything, you know, it's through the looking glass. It's worse than Orwell because it's fiction. It's through the looking glass. It's following the rabbit down the hole. And, you know, it's late. It's late for a very important date. No time to say hello, goodbye. I'm late. Thanks, Maddie.
Okay, take care, Mike.
All right, you too.
Bye-bye.
Our Brooklyn Bureau Chief, Maddie Jones. Thanks, Maddie. Appreciate you checking in. Quick break. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy.
She caused a revolution when she would not share, and her husband lost his head for that mistake. The Hindenburg was a giant Zeppelin. Its makers made a minor oversight. Before they filled it up with explosive gas, they should have fixed the no-smoking light. History is made by stupid people. Clever people wouldn't even try. If you want a face in the history books, then do something.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more Mike Malloy.
It's about 26 before the hour. Email here from Heretic. Hey, Mike, the important thing to keep in mind today, and it is, and it's a hard idea for many older folks to assimilate, is that video games aren't just games anymore. When you think of video games, you probably think of older, much simpler games, like, as you said on the air, Mario Brothers or Pac-Man, etc. But video games aren't that simple anymore. They've reached staggering new levels of complexity, and they're not all shooting and violence either. Video games today are a new art form, combining the other key fine arts of writing, film, music, and adding on top of those experiences a varying level of interactivity. Many video games have their own full orchestral soundtrack. They can tell stories longer and more in-depth than any movie or book is capable of. Just something to keep in mind when you refer to those damn PS3s. All right, you know, I still maintain, though, Heretic, I don't disagree with what you're saying, what Heretic is saying. I just maintain that the insanity of people standing in line at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I know somebody can say, well, what do you think they did for the Grateful Dead? Okay. But to stand in line at 3 o'clock in the morning, somebody else sent me an email here that said in Indiana, with the temperature in the 30s and rain for 3 days, people got online to get a PlayStation 3 in those conditions. I don't know. I guess it's like any other topic. If you don't understand it, what the hell are you talking about it for? And I guess tonight I'm terribly guilty of just that. So for people who feel that shooting someone in a parking lot over a PlayStation 3, no offense, Heretic, you know, or beating someone up and stealing their PlayStation 3 is, you know, just part of the cultural milieu right now. Okay, you know, I guess, whatever. See how I framed that? Back to your phone calls. Nick is calling from Minneapolis. Nick, thanks for holding on.
Hey, Mike, it's great to talk to you, and it's great to hear you back on the airwaves.
Well, thank you. Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Anyway, I am alternately proud and ashamed to report that I'm from the 5th District of Minnesota, home of Keith Ellison, Muslim elected to the House of Representatives.
Yes, indeed.
And also very proud to report, you know, Amy Klobuchar, female Democrat and young senator, junior senator.
Yes, I'm aware of that victory, too.
Yep. The other one is, well, you know, it's Michelle Bachmann, and I don't know if you're aware of her. She's a photogenic but extremely scary theocrat from the district right next to Mr. Ellison, and she's coming in, and her big goal for her first 2 years is to not go to jail. That was her...
for what?
Not specified. She just does not want to go to jail. I noticed that her promise wasn't that she would not commit crime. She just doesn't want to go to jail.
Well, okay.
Yeah, and the third piece of this, it's kind of a little Neapolitan slice of religious insanity from this state. Uh-huh. There was in the state elections for the state senate in one of the northern suburbs of the Twin Cities area, there was a Hindu candidate and a Christian candidate. The Hindu candidate won handily by, like, you know, over 20 points. We're talking like 25, 30 points.
Uh-huh.
And the Christian candidate, the concession speech was largely an exhortation for the victor to convert to Christianity. You know, alternately, very, very proud, very, very happy to be in such a very blue district in a very blue state.
But
then you'll get these little, I don't know, man, it's scary. And I got to say, I'm really proud of the way Keith Ellison handled himself in front of that vile filth, Glenn Beck. Oy.
Oh, what a piece of human waste he is, I know.
Yeah, you've heard about what he did with Mr. Ellison.
Oh, yeah, asked him, you know, why should I not be afraid of you, even though you were duly elected, why shouldn't I consider you to be a terrorist? Glenn Beck represents everything that is reptilian in media. CNN headlines really scrape down into the bottom of the barrel. But you know what? Because he had that interview that captured for him another interview, this one with Benjamin Netanyahu. Once Glenn Beck declared himself willing to see Muslim Americans as subhuman, Benjamin Netanyahu decided to sign on because Benjamin Netanyahu also sees the people who are of Arabic descent, by his own admission, or Muslim, as being subhuman. So whether they blow up buses in Tel Aviv or not.
Them and the Kahana High, eh?
I'll say again?
Them and the Kahana High.
Well, yes. So,
yeah,
you know, Glenn Beck, I don't even like to say his name on this program because this guy is really scum.
Yeah.
He makes Limbaugh look like a decent human being. He makes Hannity look like an upstanding young American.
Filled full of filth. I mean, what's the difference between one dung heap and another?
Well,
you just got to know not to step in it.
Well, that's very true, too. All right, listen, thanks for checking in, Nick. I appreciate
it. Hey, Mike.
Yes. What? Say it again, Nick.
Some polka.
Oh, you want some polka music?
More polka.
We'll get to some polka music, don't worry. I know you people in Minnesota love polka music.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Okay,
yeah.
Nick. Thanks. I appreciate it. You take care. Have a good weekend. Email from, I can't make out who it's from. Speaking of framing, I just read Maureen Dowd's Saturday column in the New York Times. Here's the tease. It's called Squeaker of the House. That's the column that'll be in my Times tomorrow morning. Nancy Pelosi's first move after the Democratic triumph was to throw like a girl. You see? See how that works? Oh, I admit Maureen Dowd writes some funny stuff occasionally, but she hates everybody. I don't know what Maureen Dowd's problem is. It's none of my business anyway. Ralph is calling from Portland, Oregon. Ralph, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening, Kathy and Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
Welcome back on the air.
Thank you.
I guess a welcome to us receiving you back on the air.
I can't wait till we're back on in Portland.
Ah, you know, there are so many rascals out there. You don't even know where to start. And, you know, your focus on framing, I think, is excellent.
Well, like I said earlier, I've come late to that party. George Lakoff, obviously, is the expert on the whole issue of framing. And various people around the Internet have been writing about this now for a considerable length of time. It's just an issue that I have not brought up primarily because I guess somewhere in my paying attention or paying inattention to this, I just figured it was being covered much more adequately by people who understood it and were way ahead of the curve, way beyond me, reporting it and talking about it on a much higher level than I could. But again, after this conversation with Kathy today, after we watch how it was presented about the two caucuses electing their leaders, that's when it really struck home.
Well, I prefer to use the term psycho impulses.
Psycho
impulses. And it's the effect, the direct effect on the brain so that you remember that particular item, and it's very difficult to clear your brain of that impulse. And I think for us, you know, the Democrats won, but we still don't know that the voting machines are not able to be flipped one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
All we know is that the Democrats won, so we have to pay very careful attention to what's going on. And I think we need to find our own ways to come up with those psycho impulses or frames,
mm-hmm.
because it's very important to get the ship going the way you want it to go. It's a very huge ship, America.
Right.
And to turn it around, it takes our own framing. For example, one may think of Clear Channel as a very strong signal. I prefer to think of it as Clear Channel as nothing is there. It's clear.
Well, you know, this program is carried on a Clear Channel station in San Francisco, and hopefully will be carried on many more Clear Channel stations. I understand what you're saying, but let's not completely shoot the messenger.
Absolutely not. What I'm saying is we have the channels, so to speak, that we can use. Now we have to find the words. Words are powerful. I mean, what's the Bible say? You know, the beginning was the Word. The words that will impact people.
That's true.
We need to start using our own framing, because the programming is already there in the human mind. That's why they're using it. It's because it works. We have to fight back. We cannot rest easy.
I hear you. Hey, Ralph, we got to leave it there. Thanks, Ralph.
Right.
I appreciate you checking in. Take care. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us, Truth Seekers.
Bang, 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 bang. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. I love the way you walk, and I love the way you talk. When you walk that walk.
And your day screaming with Mike Malloy.
You knocks me out, out off of my feet. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang.
It's about 10 before the hour. Thanks to the crew. Billy Foster engineered the program in Phoenix. Ian Huff answered your calls in that city at KPHX, our home base. Chris in Minnesota is our senior correspondent. Mark Marshall, our webmaster at MikeMalloy.com. Thanks to the militant mods who run the message board there. Also, Ben Birch, White Rose Society, archives the program. Podcasting and downloads of this program available at NovaMRadio.com. Right back to your phone calls. Scott is calling from Mississippi. Scott, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. What's going on?
Hey, you are.
Hey, thank you. I just wanted to give you a call and talk to you about this framing issue for a little bit and let you know that a really good book on this issue that's very comprehensive is called The Unreality Industry.
Uh-huh.
By Ian Mitroff. And so, you know, for you or your listeners, very comprehensive outline of the whole framing thing. It's something that sociologists have been talking about for a long period of time.
Uh-huh. What's the title again?
It's called The Unreality.
The Unreality.
Industry, yeah.
Industry, okay.
Industry. It talks about how essentially framing comes at you from pretty much all points. You're surrounded by it with the TV and the news media. And it's not just about what's being said, but it's about the images that are being presented to you also, which kind of frame, you know, your perspective on something.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is that it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
okay.
That's it. I just wanted to let you know it's a really good book. And for your listeners, you know, it's a really good book if they want to know more about it.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Scott. All right. I appreciate you.
Glad to have you back.
Thank you,
bye-bye.
Sir. Appreciate you checking in. Diane is calling from Boulder, Colorado. Diane, welcome to the program.
I'm suspicious of the timing concerning a certain murderer being thrust back into the spotlight by a multinational communications corporation that's really, really scared about what it saw on the tea leaves concerning the Democrats taking over in the midterm election.
So you're talking about O.J. Simpson and Fox?
I didn't even want to say his name.
I know.
Oh, I mean, the time suck that he caused because a certain Miss Rhodes was involved in covering the trial, and insane people were calling up, reliving all of the controversy, not noticing that it was diverting attention from what we need to pay attention to right now, fixing the voting machines, getting rid of them if necessary.
That's true. That's very
watching
true.
Over what the small machinations, the small deals that are going to go down between now and when the junior senators and congresspeople are going to be sworn in and already corrupted.
Mm-hmm.
This started, the tea leaves were starting to shake when suddenly, out of nowhere, Rupert Murdoch, after calling Hillary Clinton just about everything except the Antichrist,
right,
gives her money.
I know.
Stands besides her. And you're saying, what is he seeing? He had polls. The Washington elite didn't want to see it. The lobbyists didn't want to see it. He polled. He knew. But he can't say nothing because his income depends on fanatics.
That's
what
true.
What does he do? He hedges his bets. And it takes a long, long time to get a book done. It has to be announced. They have to have a conference in Miami or some warm weather climate, and they have to tell the salespeople, this is what we're going to be doing in the fall, nearly mm-hmm. a year before. The contracts have to be drawn up 2 years ago. In the middle of all the mishigas concerning Judith Regan, finding out just how much of a hoe she is, and now she's a victim. Get this. She's saying she's publishing the book because she wants OG to confess.
She considers this to be his confession. Oh, give me a break.
And because she suffered spousal abuse 20 years ago. Never mind that she was stuffing Bernie Kerik on the dead ashes of all the people who died of the World Trade Center looking over while cheating on his wife.
I know. It's awful. It's like a spider web. But you know what, Diane? Maybe Heidi Fleiss will hire OJ, put him in the next room, the room next to Tyson. And if Tyson, the rapist, isn't scary enough for the ladies, they can slip into bed with OJ, who will then tell them about what it might have been like to have been at a double murder scene with blood all over the place. Ooh!
I can say this, you can't. What the heck is this man Dingle mean coming up out of the ashes? Just these big black fucks coming out of the id, coming out the worst kind of people, black or white, abusers, murderers, rapists, and they get to have center stage. Going out and scaring people about the Mau Maus. This is nuts. It is unfair. It is playing towards race war. It is just as pure as that fool Castagna trying to scare people with anthrax. It's playing around with gasoline, and you're flicking the matches into it.
I've never heard your voice go up that high. You're upset
tonight.
I'm sorry.
I'm not even talking about that puto that's on CNN. I ain't even saying just they're bogarting both the blogs and certain liberal networks' airtime in terms of advertising, that they're whitewashing it. They're going from wall to wall trying to get the blood up when the one thing that Democrats and liberals have to think about is being rational.
Yeah.
Halloween is over.
Maybe not.
4 years, 6 years, 20 years, 12 years. I know we can be scared again. I know they will provoke us again. We did not get a terrorist attack that was supposedly going to be cooked up by Rove and certain rogue operators.
Right.
We didn't get that for October surprise. We're getting a November surprise. They want to de-rationalize us. We can't afford this.
They're not going to get me, and I know they're not going to get you.
Think about Baby Jane. Just think about Hush, Hush, Sweet Charlotte. Would you see this in a movie by Robert Aldrich?
Yeah.
Would Betty Davis or Joan Crawford be playing Judith Regan saying, I used to be a victim, and then there's this huge buck by Sidney Poitier. Do you really want to go to the movies to see this? If you don't want to go to see it in the movies, don't take it in real life.
I got you. Diane, thanks. Have a great weekend. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Take care. Oh, my God. I just love Diane. I love all y'all. Thanks for participating in the program tonight, however you did that, and all this week. I do appreciate it. I'll see you Monday night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.